That's what they called gonorrhea back in the day, was the clap.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast.
Sapnin!
Sapnin!
You're listening to episode 99 of Sapnin Podcast with Sean Smith and my good friend and obvious hype man from what he's just done there, Morgan Richards.
Yes, it's me, Morgan Richards. And not only will this episode open your eyes to a spokesman of our scene, but kick off a whole celebratory period for us as 99 red balloons.
I knew you were
going to
do 99 red balloons, and I can't believe you've gone for it. You didn't have to. This is the thing. This week's guest is the very, very awesome, the very, very caffeinated John Feldman. Producer, singer, frontman, multi-instrumentalist, life coach, and he has a back catalogue of songs that you could choose loads and loads from, and you chose 99 Red Balloons.
Yeah, I know it was a cover, but it's our 99th episode, Sean, so it kind of fits in. And it was celebrating, you need balloons to celebrate, it's a key factor in any party.
Do you need balloons? I've been to birthday parties right before now that have been amazing, and I promise you there wasn't a balloon there.
Could have been better with a balloon, though.
Would it? Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Yes, our guest this week is producing Superman, Goldfinger icon, and musical mastermind Mr. John Feldman. And this, Sean, is quite a big deal because he doesn't just waste his time on anybody. He's such a busy man. He's got a hell of a schedule writing songs, making records, and drinking coffee every single day. But we've got over an hour with him to look back at his career, some of the most iconic records he's worked with, written, produced, and just so many amazing things. So basically, he's had a whole influence over a generation of music fans, not just with Goldfinger impacting an army of ska punk skaters and mosh maniacs, but being behind the scenes with so many of our favourite records.
Correct, absolutely correct.
Do you want me to read out just some mind of the artists he's produced?
No, thank you.
No?
Ah, go on then. No,
okay.
On.
Well, it's the likes of Blink-182, The Used.
Have you heard of them?
Good Charlotte, oh. Story of the Year.
No way.
All Time Low.
I can't carry on doing this.
Panic at the Disco.
Panic at the Disco.
5 Seconds of Summer, Papa Roach, Black Veil Brides, Fever 333, Hilary Duff, and even Ashley Simpson.
Well, surely Raiders are the only people he hasn't worked with yet. Get in touch, John. What an unbelievable chat. What a fantastic fella. And yes, he promised us a look at Travis Barker's house from his house as well.
Yeah.
Which was very, very interesting.
Literally. So we're just going to get an insight into his day-to-day schedule, his best friend, Travis Barker, his whole induction into the kind of punk discography, how he discovered The Used and his relationship with Bert, the early days, evolution of just literally everything, how his father impacted his life, a potential new record for Goldfinger, addiction, coffee drinking, and so
Jesus
much
Christ.
More. It's full of little anecdotes, Sean. It's
I know, I was
literally
there.
Mind-blowing. Yeah, but I'm just excited. I'm excited about this one.
I can see it.
I think people are going to be, and it's going to be a whale of a time.
Yes, as Morgan said, this man has done so much, and as I bet you, he's produced some bands you wouldn't even have guessed as well. So, yeah, and I did ask him, is he sick of Travis Barker turning up at his house all the time? So, may as well stick around for that, innit? But yeah, thank you again to John and his people for sorting this out. It was very, very fun to do and very, very interesting.
And just to say as well, since we've recorded this, Goldfinger have actually released a new single titled Wallflower that's available on all streaming platforms now. So listen to the at the end of this episode. Thank you very much. But we do get in to some potential exclusive news on more music in this chat, so don't go anywhere because we've got all the gossip, all the caffeine, and all the good times.
Yes, and yeah, if you've enjoyed any of these episodes so far, let us know, or if you've got any ideas for guests, or who you want to hear, or what you want to hear about. You know, it doesn't have to be about being in a band. It could be working for a band. It could be anything. It could be a comedian. Anything. If you have any ideas whatsoever and you want to get in touch with us, get in touch with us on Instagram or Twitter at SappeningPod. That's @SAPPENINPOD. That's @SAPPENINPOD.
And if you've enjoyed 99, how have we reached 99? This is literally the last double-digit episode we will ever do. That's weird.
Is it?
Well, yeah, because that's how numbers work.
Of course it is, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, sorry. Maths.
I had an E in maths.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to tell people.
It's all right. No, it's fine.
I know, but I was just going to tell people if they've enjoyed all the mad rambles and guests we've had, maybe they should check out patreon.com/sapnin, where they can get involved with a wonderful community of members we love very, very much, and get even more bonus content, and get to be El Crebe, I've done that wrong, crazy in Spanish with us.
What did you say?
El Crebe. What is it?
I don't know what the fuck you're on about. What is this? What?
99?
Patreon.com/sapnin. We are going mad. Yeah. Check this out. This is John Feldman. Thank you very much to John again. This is fucking brilliant.
Yes.
Sapnin!
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Sapnin!
What's happening?
Oh, he's gone for, full version. Yes. Yes, this week's guest is a singer, songwriter, A&R person, producer, podcaster, father. Is there anything else I've missed out there, John? caffeine enthusiast?
Yeah, a caffeine addict for sure.
Yes.
I've got that as well. I got my dog's here as well.
Oh wow.
Chilling.
Even better.
There we go.
Yeah.
It's all going one. On.
Yeah.
Mochi. Yes. Mochi is licking my face. We're all here. Everyone's here, ready to go.
Yes, this week's guest is the amazing John Feldman. Yes, how are you? How are things?
I'm really good. I mean, yeah, things are good. I got up. I worked out on the elliptical already. I took my dogs out. I've had a day already. I'm thinking about what song I'm going to write today. It's a good day.
That's awesome. That's really, really good to hear. And yeah, it's nice to see you in a positive mood, because we had so many people on here lately who have been like, I'm not really up to much. I'm kind of losing the creativity because of the lockdown or whatever. Have you felt any of that? Has that been a part for you at all, or is it just all go?
You know, we can either live in COVID in the lockdown with a good attitude, or we can live it in a bad attitude. I mean, it's really up to you. It's not up to anybody else. You know, what can we control? We can't control anything outside of our own, like, little, like they say, the hula hoop that surrounds us. It's like, but I can control my own attitude, right? And like HR says, you know, positive mental attitude is the only way. I mean, there's no other way to go. I don't want to be sitting in my house with some just fucking complaining about the government and politics and the state of the world. It's just like, I want to keep moving forward. I have kids. I've got my dogs. I've got my wife. It's just like, I there's no other way for me. Like when that negativity creeps in, I have to go work out. I have to go meditate. I cannot sit in that negative space any longer. Life is so fucking short. And I'm not saying don't protest. I'm not saying don't be angry. I'm just saying, like, sitting around complaining and being miserable and not doing anything about it is not the answer for me.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Yes. What a great answer.
Yeah. Well, to start, one thing I wanted to get in straight away is that we've been told by so many other bands that we've had on the podcast who have worked with you and just in general that you're such a busy man all the time. I mean, every year there's countless John Feldman produced records, touring with Goldfinger as much as you can. But like, what is a day to day? What is your day to day schedule normally like on an average day for John Feldman? I mean, walk us through it.
Okay. I get up at 6:30. I meditate. I pray to whatever. I don't know what I pray to be honest. It's an interesting thing because it's not a religious thing, but I do believe that there is, I mean, you know, if all the smartest people that have ever existed believe, you know, if Stephen Hawking believed in big, vast laws governing the universe that's holding everything together, why would I think it's just all random nonsense that means nothing, that came from nothing and leads to nothing? Why would I believe that if Einstein believed in these, you know, incredible powers that we don't understand, that they exist, why wouldn't I? And so whatever I pray to, I mean, I pray to keep me sober. I'm sober a long time, and I do not want to end up at a donkey show in Tijuana with some random Mexican dude's tongue in my ear, which is exactly kind of where I ended up towards the end of my drinking. So, you know, whatever it is that kind of holds us, whatever holds us into place and keeps gravity existing, I'm going to pray to that. I work out every day. I mean, there's never an exception, whether I'm running with my dogs, whether I'm boxing with Glenn Holmes from Manchester, who's my boxing coach. I have an elliptical at my house. I do some sort of physical exercise. Today, I'm actually playing tennis with Michael Clifford, who's staying in my community from Five Sauce. You know, he's my boy. So I've got that going on. I'm going to write a song. You know, Travis Barker lives maybe a stone's throw away from my house. I can literally see his house from my house up on the hill. Maybe I'll show you later on in this thing. And and so he'll come over. You know, we'll write something. He's always working with someone that's kind of outside of my world. Like, he's working with Trippie Redd. horror, you know, that H09909 group. He's working with Poor Stacy, like all these artists that I don't normally come into my existence. So I'll maybe come up with a riff, and then he'll like put down like some kind of beat, or he'll come up with a rhythm, and then I'll write a little riff around it. You know, I'm working with this band called Five North right now. This guy, Tyler Posey. I don't know if you know, he's an actor. He was in that Teen Wolf show. He was in Jane the Virgin. He's a really good man. And his band, Five North, we've got signed to my label. So I'm finishing his album. And then I'll take out, like last night, I took out my daughter for dinner. We had like a little daddy daughter date. It was amazing. And then I'll listen to a bunch of mixes, like that my engineers have prepared a bunch of mixes for me. I'll go through them and make a bunch of tweaks at the end of the night. And I'll kind of finish up some mixes and then do it all again the next day. Cheers. Yeah, thanks for having me.
No, wow.
That's awesome. That is, that's a lot going on. Yeah, quick question. Do you ever get sick of Travis coming over? Because I can't imagine any musician ever going, oh, come on, Trav, not more drums, Jesus Christ. But yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, look, if you know, in the big picture of musicians, I mean, I don't think I've worked with a better. I mean, look, I produced Panic at the Disco's third album, and you know, maybe between Patrick Stump and Brendan Urie, I don't know of that I've worked with better singers. I mean, look, Ryan from the Hunt is incredible. I mean, you know, Brendan Urie's touched with something amazing, but I mean, Travis Barker, like this all around. I mean, I would have been a drummer if I didn't smoke so much weed in high school. I was just too fucking, I was too lazy to carry the drum kit around. I was like stoned fucking all the time. And so because of that, I became a singer. I didn't have to bring anything. The PA already existed. So no gear, nothing, and none of that shit. So, I mean, Travis is like, he's not human. And I think he's the best drummer that's ever lived. I mean, Neil Peart is like, you know, technically, you know, when I was growing up, I loved smoking weed and listening to Rush and taking acid and listening to Rush and all the, you know, I mean, YYZ is one of those, you know, all those rhythms were so interesting, but like he was kind of, you know, Travis can do all the technical stuff. I mean, he can do all that progressive, like, I mean, we had the song yesterday that was kind of like, Deftones meets Tool, kind of crazy. And we had this bridge that he just fucking smashed it one take. And I was like, holy fuck, it was just so incredible. And he can do hip hop like nobody. I mean, he can do hip hop like nobody. And obviously, like, look, Bill Stevenson, you know, is arguably the greatest punk rock drummer of all time. Other than Travis Barker. I mean, Travis Barker is the greatest punk rock drummer of all time. I mean, nobody, you know, I mean, obviously Travis has a huge Descendants tattoo on his leg and he's a, you know, massive, or maybe it's on his stomach. I don't know. Next time he's naked at my house, I'll check it out, you know? But I mean, everyone comes from something and it's like Travis can just do everything better than anybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I brought that up because, we spoke to Ryan from the Hunter a couple of weeks ago, and he was just saying how, like, he was just sitting in the studio, and then you were like, oh yeah, Pete Wentz is going to turn up, and he was like, what the fuck, like, ah, what? And he was just mind blown by it. Is it, does that happen a lot with the Feldman recording process? Is there constantly people nipping in and out?
I mean, I like to be with good people. I like to be with positive people, and I like to be with people that can add something to the creative process. And Pete Wentz is one of a kind when it comes to lyrics. That kid is one of a kind. I mean, he is so unique, and he's just so studied, and he's so well-read. You know, him and Mark Hoppus actually are very similar in the way that they kind of write lyrics. They're very just professional and serious about the way they write their lyrics. It's like, and I'm not like that. I either get inspired by a lyric that I write, or it's just takes fucking forever. And those guys are like, they'll have books and they'll go on the internet and they'll just be like, you know what? It's my wife, Amy, just came in.
Hi.
She brought me my breakfast. Like, lucky me. How lucky am I? I just knew that Pete would really get along with the Hunna. I just, you know, I feel like I can connect people in ways that maybe others others can't. Just be, I mean, because look, I'm 53. I've been doing this since I was 12. I've met countless people throughout my journey. And I feel like, you know, there was a moment during making the Hunter record, I was like, you know what, there could be a moment, you know, there was a moment that I was like, Pete could really help with this song. And, you know, bringing him in was the right thing to do. Same with Travis on the Hunter record. I mean, he just brought, you know, Travis really brings songs to life, you know, when you're kind of like stuck and you know you've got a really great hook, but whatever programming that I've done for, you know, the drums or the beat just don't lift it. Like Travis just brings it to life. And, you know, I feel like everyone that I bring into albums is like, there's a reason for it. You know, there's a band that I signed called The Fame from Perth, Australia that I just got, I love those guys. And, I knew that Ashton, you have them on the show.
Yeah, we have. They talk very highly of you.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice. I knew Ashton from Five Sauce could really, I mean, just his style. And I knew that because they were both from Australia, that they shared this kind of all these common roots. And so bringing him in was like very, I mean, it's not like I'm analyzing it and like and crunching the numbers to think, how can these help? I just have a gut feeling that this will be a good connection, you know, with most of these artists that I bring in to kind of help these younger bands.
Yeah.
Oh, it's absolutely awesome. Phenomenal. But you mentioned there your journey, and I think it's safe to say that it's been such a creative one all these years, from working with all these bands, Goldfinger and everything. But if we can take a step back, how did everything really first start? Because as you said, you've been doing this for years. You were a member of bands before Goldfinger. How did it transition into becoming just what everything is today?
I was thinking earlier, like when we first started talking, that I wonder how driven I would be if I was really supported by my parents. I mean, my mom was sort of, she was just kind of there. My dad had polio, so he was in a wheelchair. So my mom was pretty much a caretaker for my dad. And my dad was a nuclear physicist. So he built the fuel to put the rocket on the moon, the smartest guy I've ever met. He was an engineer. And so he had all these expectations for me to kind of follow in his footsteps. And when I started showing interest to like playing the guitar and punk rock and playing the bass when I was like 12, you know, he was like, this is never going to happen for you. He couldn't understand that this could be a career, which is, you know, I mean, he was just, you know, looking out for me thinking, how's this kid going to have a future if there's no future in punk rock? I mean, you know, back then when it was like Black Flag and the Adolescents and the Circle Jerks, like none of those bands were making a living. I mean, they would play some shows, but most of them all worked jobs, you know, on the side. It wasn't like Green Day didn't exist. So I can't fault my father but part of my drive, I think, came from proving him wrong, you know, and needing to prove him wrong. And I think that drive in me that still exists is there. My dad's been, you know, he's been dead for 10 years, but I still like have this, like, I got to prove it. And I think part of that started my journey as a kid. But, you know, punk rock really spoke to me because I didn't get along with my parents. I hated school. You know, I was, whenever, you know, we'd go out and skateboarding or at parties, cops were always the enemy. We're all like, how do we fucking get away from the cops? So this anti-authority kind of mindset that I had, I mean, punk rock was the first thing that I sunk my teeth into, you know, it was the Sex Pistols and the Clash and all the kind of British bands in the beginning. And then it was Southern California punk rock when that became the thing. But like, as a kid, I knew, like, there was part of me that had to hide, you know, my love of pop music. I mean, I loved Queen, I loved The Who, and then, like, you know, pop music like Duran Duran and even Wham. Like, I knew that the songs were amazing, but I had to hide my love for it. And then, like, as I got older and I started like expanding my horizons to like Metallica and just like, well, I remember the first time I heard like the double kick drum when I was probably like 16, when that kind of music came out. It was like when thrash became a thing. I was like, my first band, Family Crisis, was straight punk rock. It was like Social Distortion meets the Buzzcocks. And then my second band was called the Electric Love Hogs. And we were like, I don't know, we were like somewhere between, you know, Metallica, Motley Crue, and the Red Hot Chili Peppers. We had a slapping bass player. And it was just like my love for music in general has never, I've never really been shy to hide it. And I've gotten shit about like, you know, be the purists or whatever, but it was like, you know, as I think I wouldn't be the producer that I am if I didn't have such a wide spectrum of love of music. And, you know, I punk rock speaks to my soul because it was the first music that I ever really was, you know, became passionate about. But all these other things, like, I mean, in the big picture of my life, I can tell you guys that, you know, I know, like, we took Korn on their, the Electric Love Hawks took Korn on their first tour. We took Tool on their first tour. We took Rage Against the Machine on their first tour. Wow. It's wow. Like, we had the greatest, we had Pearl Jam open for us. We had all these amazing things happen for us. And I've got relationships with like so many, you know, with the guys in Korn and Tom Morello and all these bands because I, you know, and Rage Against the Machine that I still have in my life because I had this big spectrum. And, you know, Goldfinger changed my life forever because I went back to my roots and I said, this is the music that really speaks to my heart. And when I started Goldfinger in 1993, I knew that that was what. Because in the Electric Love Hogs, we had five guys that all felt like we were all songwriters, and we weren't all songwriters. And there was the guitar solos, and I never was a fan of the guitar solo, and so it wasn't meant to be. But Goldfinger, I knew was going to be my project, that I was going to be the sole songwriter, you know. And when I put it together, I remember I sent it. I was you know, we played a lot of shows with Weezer, and I was friends with Tom that signed Weezer, and I sent him a cassette that had on one side, it had like kind of the extension, like a more kind of Rage Against the Machine. It was a band called Eel, E-E-L. And I had that on one side. The other side, I had all these Goldfinger demos. And I sent it to Tom. I said, I'm, you know, what do I do? Do I do this aggressive, hard shit, or do I go with my gut and do like more melodic, like, you know, songwriting sense of it? And he said, dude, you have to do this Goldfinger thing. This is amazing. And having people along the way in your life that can kind of be that guide, I think is so important. And like, I may say that, you know, my father wasn't supportive, but he was definitely key. I mean, there's no way I would be as successful as I am without the drive to kind of say the conflict that my dad and I had.
Yeah. That's an unbelievable story. Just having those other bands supportive is that's insane. That's absolutely insane. How did you come from Goldfinger to producing other bands then? What made that come about?
You know, it's the fucking control freak in me. Like I had, you know, when I was making Goldfinger's first record, I had to understand why. You know, why these things, like, why did I love the snare sound on the Let's Go Rancid record? You know, why did I love the way Eddie Vedder's vocals sounded on 10? You know, all these things that, like, I would, you know, kind of a collection of the things I loved, like the bass tone on You Say You Don't Love Me by the Buzzcocks. Like, there are certain things that throughout my life I'd always been attracted to, like, when I listened to music. You know, because I was a bass player in the beginning, you know, that's how I started playing. And so when I was learning playing bass to the Buzzcocks, you know, I eventually found out it's the kick drum and the bass drum land on this at the same moment, you know, and having that like rhythm, this like do 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 do, you know, that whole thing is like, that's what drove me to really want to learn the bass, because it held the whole bottom end. And so when I was in the studio making Goldfinger, I mean, I didn't really care that much in the Electric Love Hogs. Although I want to say this guy, Mark Dodson, and also, you know, Tommy Lee produced that record for Motley Crue. And, you know, I would have, you know, I remember eventually Mark Dodson, who at the time he produced Suicidal Tendencies, which was our favorite band. And we're like, we got to have this guy produce our record, Infectious Grooves. This guy was a legend. And so I remember one day I came in the studio and I'm like, I've got notes for the mix. And Mark Dodson said, you can't come in the studio. Just give me the notes. Cause I was so annoying. So I had like, I literally had to write down 4 pages of notes for the poor guy. I feel so bad even to this day that he had to put up with my craziness. But by the time I made Goldfinger's first record, I really wanted to be involved with the whole process, like setting up the mics and moving the mic around the amp, you know, to find the sweet spot on the cone and like, what kind of tape were we using and all that shit, you know? And so, you know, by the time I made that record, record. I was just more interested in how do you get to the finish line and make, you know, because Bad Religion by that point was my, you know, I grew up on Bad Religion, and we actually, my Family Crisis, my first band, played shows with Bad Religion way back in like 1982 or something. By the time Suffer came out, I'm like, this is the record I want to make. And so I wanted to get those sounds. And so by the time I found Show Off, which was the first band I ever produced, we played the, we played this bowling alley in Chicago, and they were the opening band. And it was like, I saw them and I'm like, holy shit, these guys are awesome. How can I help? Because their demo sounded terrible. So I flew them to, you know, I fucking flew them to LA, and I'm like, I can make this better. I knew I could make it better. And I got them signed to a record deal. So it all, that was the first band that I said, maybe there is something beyond just touring, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can't argue that you've definitely taken that go, go, go punk rock ethos into everything you do. But with Goldfinger as well, I mean, when the band came out, it seemed that you had so many different influences at that time, and were part of so many different scenes. I mean, you kind of were on that wave of ska punk, but then had the kind of darker, grittier alternative movements and playing with those kind of bands and stuff. How did you see the rise of Goldfinger? Because it did seem you were kind of like this unique band at the time. You didn't really fit into a certain subgenre, but you were a part of all these different scenes.
Look, there's no question that we're a ska punk band, and we started out in the ska punk scene. There's no question. I mean, our first tour was with Bucko 09. We played so many shows with the Skeletones. I mean, I discovered Real Big Fish. I signed Real Big Fish. We were definitely like the third wave. We were right there at the precipice of the third wave of ska punk. I mean, the first concert I ever saw was the Beat, you know, the English Beat when I was a kid. And it was like the Beat, the Specials, Madness. I mean, it was all kind of part of like that kind of early kind of punk rock and ska always went hand in hand. And, you know, Operation Ivy definitely opened the door for what this thing is. But I mean, for me, it was like, how do I take all my influences, which I mean, mainly, you know, the Police had such a ska, and I think probably the Police are my all-time favorite band, you know, if I had to choose, just Stuart Copeland, like, you know, as a drummer, and Sting as a songwriter. I just don't know of anyone that has influenced me more than them, and they had such a ska thing, like them, you know, so it was like taking all of it, like the Specials, the Beat, the Police, and then having that Social Distortion, Buzzcocks, Elvis Costello side of everything. But then, you know, because I played in a metal band, it's like, you know, I don't know if you, how much, like there's a song called Pictures on the first album that has this Jojo, 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 like full Metallica kind of breakdown in it. And we have a song called SMP on the second record that's like a Skiers Must Perish is the name of this song, which is kind of whatever. I was such a snowboarder back then. It was like, you know, we always had this kind of metal edge to our music. And so I don't know. I mean, in the big picture, if you really analyzed every Goldfinger song, there's definitely more. It's probably punk rock, ska second, alternative third, and then probably, you know, probably like hard, something like hard metal alternative fourth. You know, it's like if you really put it together that way. And I think as I get older, I just finished another Goldfinger album. Oh, and nice. and it's really, I mean, it is really ska and reggae. I mean, that's what it is. And I feel like I get to get that out of me in Goldfinger, because I it's not like I'm producing a lot of ska bands, because it's not like, you know, it's like you have the Interrupters, and that's kind of it. It's like you've got one kind of new band that's carrying the flag. I mean, so for me, Goldfinger is the avenue I can take to get that out of me, because I produce punk rock bands, I produce metal bands, I produce alternative bands, but it's like, this is how I get it out. So when I write music for Goldfinger, I'm writing pretty much writing ska on purpose, you know?
Nice.
Well, I was going to ask about new Goldfinger. I mean, what's the situation now? Is the record completely done? Is everything recorded and mixed and stuff? Because obviously the last record you released was back in 2017 with The Knife, and there's always been questions since that if there was another record in the works or not. So what's the situation now?
Yeah, I've got to finish I've got a finished album. We're still trying to figure out the title of the album.
Okay.
We're thinking about Don't Look Back, because it's a lyric in one of my favorite songs on the album. So the record is mixed. We're mastering it next week.
Nice.
And it is an interesting thing, you know, because, you know, you think about some of the great, you know, a lot of the great bands like No Doubt or The Police or Rage Against the Machine. They all have the same members throughout their career. And that hasn't been the case for me. I've had, you know, a lot of struggle with band members. I've just struggled, you know, kind of personality wise and like, you know, how, you know, Charlie, the guitar player, has been in and out. I think 4 times he's quit the band and he's in the band now. He's played on this new record. So Charlie and I are the only original members. You know, we have kind of a super group, because when Kelly left to join Buck Cherry, you know, Mike Herrera was my first call, because we had played a bunch of shows with MXPX. He's one of my favorite humans on the planet and one of my favorite bass players. And he immediately said, yeah, I'll fill in a couple shows. And then our relationship just grew. And now he's the permanent bass player, singer. He's singing a lot on the new Goldfinger record, to be honest. Like we're splitting up kind of vocal responsibilities, which is amazing. It's like I get to have another singer. And we also, you know, Phil from Story of the Year kind of stepped in to help with harmonies, because I never really had anyone that could sing in the band. In the beginning of the band, no one sang except for me. So I had all these harmonies on the first 2-3 Goldfinger records, and none of them could sing. And we've never played to track. Like, it's just not, I mean, I end up kind of fucking up and we have to restart songs live or like, I just changed my mind. I'll say, let's try and play this one. And I'll say, fuck this. I don't want to play this song anymore. It's like, I can see the audience isn't reacting, and you can't do that shit. If you're playing to track, you've got exactly. Someone trying to like catch up to what song you're playing. And so, so I knew when I had the ability to put my own super group together, like Phil is just an amazing singer, guitar player. So having him from, you know, when he left Story of the Year, it's like I knew he'd be a perfect fit in the band. And, you know, we've kind of gone back and forth with drummers. We had Cyrus from Newfound Glory, and he, because Newfound Glory plays so many shows, he couldn't be consistent. So now we've got my friend Nick Gross, who I have a record label with, you know, Big Noise. We started together. He's the drummer at Goldfinger. He's just an incredible drummer. You know, I don't know. I mean, maybe someday we'll get back with the original lineup and just do like maybe like the first record front to back or something like that. But that shit ain't happening today.
Yeah. Nice. I think, I think we're speaking to Phil next week, I think. Because, my old band got to, we toured with Story of the Year over here. But yeah, before we get to Story of the Year, a question I've always wondered is, oh, it's a couple of part question, really, is how did you discover The Used? And did you realize while working on that record how inspirational that record would be for the rest, well, for everybody since, I guess, because it's a massive part of my life. I know it's a massive part of the scene I was in. And could you just tell us how that came about?
Well, the answer to your second question is yes, for sure. I knew when we were making that album that it was going to fucking change the world. I knew it. And in hindsight, I mean, I guess at the time I thought The Used were going to really kind of create, I mean, and I guess to a certain extent they did create, they reimagined modern rock radio, because I mean, without them, My Chemical Romance wouldn't exist. And it's like, I feel, you know, between Taking Back Sunday, My Chem, and The Used, I mean, those, you know, Bert discovered My Chemical Romance. I mean, he really, you know, Bert, after we signed Bert to Warner Brothers, he discovered, you know, him and Gerard became best friends, and they just, you know, he discovered the band, got them signed. He fucking started their journey, you know? So, I mean, and plus, like, The Used maybe never became as big as Green Day, but the thing is, because The Used were such like the fan favorite, I think everyone that looked to Bert as the voice of like the emotional voice of the whole scene. I mean, if emo is emotional hardcore, I mean, there's no one that speaks that language better than Bert. Nobody. No. I mean, he, you know, he, his lyrics are beyond, you know, my ability on every level. And he's one of the greatest singers I've ever worked with. And I remember like with the first album, we'd have that trash can next to the microphone because he'd scream so hard. And I've worked, I know the scene, and I've worked with other, kind of screamo, emo artists that like they scream with that, where it's like all right here, and I'm sure all these bands that have like that, and they just compress and they just hold the mic here and they compress their vocals so hard. It just, Jason from the Fever is the same way. I mean, he screams like Bert, where it comes from here, from the fucking diaphragm. And it's like, so Bert would scream so hard, he'd throw up sometimes, and it was like we'd have the trash can there, and it was just this incredible thing that I'd never experienced before or after. It's like the way that he sings. And I think because they never became that big, I think even to this day, they're so relevant because they were such a fan favorite, and they were always like, the darlings of the scene, and Bert just jumping off the PA at Warped Tour, and just the whole thing was like legendary. And it's like, because they didn't get so big where they lost who they were, I think that they're still so relevant. When I found them, we were on tour in Salt Lake City, Goldfinger, and the Brandon, the drummer, and Quinn, the guitar player, were big Goldfinger fans. I mean, Brandon actually has a Goldfinger tattoo on his leg, which is pretty fucking awesome. The nice. Space Lady, which is rad. And he's now the drummer of Rancid, which is full circle because God, I love Rancid so much. And, they kept coming to shows, and their bass player, Jeffa, he was the singer. And then I kept listening to these demo tapes, and I'm like, I don't get it. And then all of a sudden they found Bert, and Bert, he snuck on Goldfinger's tour bus drunk, and he like left a demo cassette. And actually our tour manager had to pick Bert up, who's, he's a little guy, pick him up and threw him out of the bus because he was so drunk. But I listened to every demo I get, even to this day. I listen to everything. I don't know who, what I'm, because it's like, of course you've got, these days you've got The Voice and America's Got Talent, and you've got all these avenues that people, Instagram and TikTok and all these ways that artists can get discovered. But I still don't know when I'm going to hear something. My brain is going to hear something that's going to be different than Simon Cowell hears it. And I can take that talent and help grow it better than anybody else. And so back then it was like, I discovered a lot of bands on tour. That's how I found Story of the Year as well. But The Used I found from being on tour. I listened to that demo tape the next day and I'm like, holy shit, this singer sound. I mean, they had the beginning of The Taste of Ink, the beginning of Maybe Memories, the beginning of A Box Full of Sharp Objects. They have these like rough ideas. I think they've released all their early demos at this point, so you can hear them, but it's like you can hear them then to what kind of we turned them into as a team. I don't know. I when I was making that album, I just knew that we were going to, because they had we had every major label trying to sign them. We were flying to New York to do all these meetings. I mean, we had, probably 9 offers from different record labels. It was crazy. Yeah. I mean, Lior Cohen, who at the time, I think, ran Island Def Jam. I mean, he started 300. He runs YouTube now. This guy, this legend, flew a helicopter to Salt Lake City to take them snowboarding. And the end of the day, like, I convinced, the band that Tom Wally was the guy who, Tom Wally signed Tupac Shakur at an airport. He knew that he had a connecting flight in Burbank. So he waited at the airport. Tupac got off the plane and he signed him to a record deal. Wow. I mean, this guy, Tom had signed the Red Hot Chili Peppers and Green Day and Linkin Park. And he started Interscope Records. This guy was a legend. I just knew that he knew what to do with The Used. And, eventually he ended up signing My Chemical Romance as well. But it's like, so I think they did the right thing in the big picture of all of it. And they had, The Used had a lot of ups and downs as well, like all of us.
Yeah. Well, I really wanted to dissect your relationship with Bert in particular, because, we've had him on the podcast in the past and he's talked very open about, your relationship and everything. And he's also said many times that you've really saved his life in a lot of ways. How do you see your relationship with him and just the progress over the years? Because they've always done records where maybe they've gone away, worked with another producer, but then have come back and done stuff with you as well.
I mean, I've always kind of viewed Bert as this kind of, you know, the soul searching human. It's always questioning. He's questioning government, authority, you know, everything. And he's so well read. This guy reads more than anybody I've ever met. I mean, he reads so much. And when I first met him, because I'm, you know, because I don't drink, I'm sober, I knew I could help him in ways that maybe someone else couldn't, because he was, when I met him, I mean, he was like just a drunk drug addict, like lost kid, like so many artists. It's not like he's got this unique story, but he was really like off the deep end. And he, you know, he got sober for a while during that first album, and we made the record. He wasn't sober in the beginning. He stopped doing drugs and stopped drinking. We were able to make this fantastic piece of art. That first album is just fucking incredible. And, you know, Bert has always, because I'm, I don't know what I am, like 10, 15 years older than him. He just, I think he just kind of looks to me as a guy that's been in a band and I've walked the path of what he has to go through. And I've just done it before him. And I think the challenging part of my job is knowing the experience that I have in life and knowing what works. I know when a band is overthinking and they're going to destroy a song or they're going to destroy a relationship with a record label. I've watched so many bands go through this, or I know when a band leaves me to go work with a different producer at the wrong time. I just know it because of my experience when it's right and when it's not right. And so it's really that's probably the hardest part of my job is watching a band about to make a massive mistake in their career and knowing I can't do anything because they don't respect my experience in life. And you can't buy experience. You've got to go through it to understand this is the process, you know. And I'm not saying that bands can't be creative and expand beyond my life and grow, because there's plenty of bands that have grown past working with me. I'm just saying that Bert has always respected my experience in life and he's taken it to heart. And, you know, for the most part, you know, he's gone off the deep end and started drinking again and gotten weird and all that shit. But when we have heart to heart talks, I mean, he helps me. That guy saved my life too. There's no way around it. I mean, without discovering the use, I mean, look, I sold, you know, there was a part of my life where after Tommy Lee produced the Electric Love Hogs and we had all these bands open for us, toured the world, and then we got dropped. And I had to go back to selling shoes. I had to go back to working at a used clothing store for $5 an hour. So at that point in my life, I'm like, my dad was right. I fucking lost. I failed, you know? And then I discovered those little bands like Messed and Show Off. And it was like, there was like a hint and Goldfinger kind of happened. But, you know, I was about to be dropped as an A&R guy from Maverick when I was working there. And then I found the Used and it changed everything. It kind of put me on the map as a producer. And without the Used, I don't know if I'd be talking to you. I don't know how my life would have turned out, because I've got a career in music now where Goldfinger, I mean, it's great, but you know, we never became the Red Hot Chili Peppers, you know, we did fine. And we still do okay, but we're not. But I think because of the Used, I was able to grow a career as a producer without question.
Yeah. Yeah. With that as well, I mean, one thing I really want to talk about is the kind of connection you have made with bands over the years, working with them with songwriting, producing, mixing, the whole lot. But if you look at the whole, your discography of bands you've worked with, there's a whole generation of music fans who have really been inspired or they've been soundtracked to their lives by these bands. Like, for example, I'm 24 and you've worked with people like All Time Low, Blink-182, Good Charlotte, The Used, 5 Seconds of Summer. I mean, the list goes on. But those bands, just as that, is a soundtrack to people's growing up, older than me, everything. How do you see, over the years, your connection with the bands and music? Do you still feel that today, that even after you've done a record 10 years ago or anything, that you still have a real connection with the band, the songs, and this fan base?
I mean, look, I in my business and living in Los Angeles, you've got so many producers that are my kind of just my competition, or people that I'm, you know, my friends that are, you know, doing it. And the goal for most producers in the pop world is to win a Grammy or, platinum albums. Like the idea is to be in the pop in the pop world where you've got like a number one song at pop radio. And, you know, at one point in my life, you know, when I was working with, you know, Hilary Duff and Mandy Moore and Ashley Simpson, it was like, I you know, I had this meeting with Clive Davis at his Bel Air Hotel bungalow. And it was a 3-hour meeting. We just listened to music and he just talked to me and he wanted me to be the main songwriter for American Idol, like the guy that was going to write all the originals show. I made a decision that wasn't my route in life. I mean, all the groups that I kind of grew up on and the stuff that really spoke to me, Michael Jackson never spoke to me as a kid. I never really like said, that's the kind of music I'm going to live and die for. You know, it was like Henry Rollins from Black Flag. I mean, that guy spoke to me and I just, you know, and so I've always kind of put myself in the position that maybe I'm the underdog in the big picture of like Grammys and top 40 singles, but like, I'm okay with that. I'm okay. Like, being the guy that is always maybe just, maybe has a little bit more edge that I can't quite get it to pop radio because it's too edgy. But when I listen to music, it's still like, you know, the Replacements were one of my bands. You know, Paul Westerberg is my favorite lyricist. They never became Tom Petty. And that's okay. They still influenced me more than Tom Petty did. So why can't I be that guy? And I think about, like, I was writing with this guy, Lil Aaron, who's a great top liner. We were working with this kid named Mason last week. And he's got a THPS tattoo, yes, for Tony Hawk Pros. He's got the tattoo, just a handmade tattoo on his arm. And I'm like, those moments where, like, I know how important Superman was for the lineage of Tony Hawk Pro Skater, you know, that I was part of that. And look, do my mom's friends know that song, or do my kids' friends, my 12-year-old, know that song? No, but I know that there's a fucking army. An army of people that fucking know that song and live and die for that soundtrack. And of course, look, all the, you know, some groups have become bigger than others, but still it's like, I'm so proud of Future Hearts, the record I made with All Time Low. Yeah. I mean, I feel like, you know, that record really, like, if even All Time Low fans could really judge their albums, it's going to be one of the top two, top three favorite albums that they have. It's like, and I know how important I was making that album. And it's like, for me working, even like with The Fever, The Fever, they're never going to compete with like fucking Justin Bieber, because it's like Jason is just, he's fucking so gnarly. But I know that their fans will live and die. I know when people get the 333 tattoo, there's thousands of people with that 333 tattoo out there. Like, they're never going to have to worry that The Fever are going to become some cheesy band, because they are who they are. They're this political, angry, aggressive band. And it's like, you should never be ashamed of getting your favorite bands tattooed, because they're going to turn into something eventually that you hate. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah,
oh yeah,
yeah,
completely, absolutely, completely.
Yeah, I think about 5 years ago, I was when I was still in my old band called The Blackout, I saw somebody who literally had a tattoo of me on their arm, and I was like, oh, I wonder, he could have had it lasered off by now. Surely he's had it a cover up by now. Something must have happened to that. But yeah, it's bonkers. But you mentioned Grammys, but you did get nominated for Fever 333, right? For Best Rock Performance, so Made in America. Made in America.
Yeah, I've been nominated twice, and it's like, I guess to say, because the Blank California record I made, and then this Fever, the Best Live Best Rock Performance, you know, it's like, I don't know who gives a better rock performance than Jason. I mean, he's like, that guy gives every, I don't know if you've ever seen Let Live or
we toured together a couple of times. Yeah,
you tour with Let Live.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Was he putting the trash cans over his head?
Yeah, yeah. It was kind of it ended up being a kind of a competition of who could be the craziest front man every night. So like, he would go on before and then wear the bin and run about, and then I'd be trying to dent myself as much as I could, and it just became, yeah. And he had like blonde hair at the time of the record, and I had like a big long blonde fringe, and then by the end of the tour, I had to dye my hair blue. because he had the blonde fringe. And then by the end of the tour, he dyed his hair blue as well, just to take like the piss out of me as well. but what a fucking guy. Yeah, what a guy. What a sweetheart. Literally after about 2 days, I knew that I loved him as a person.
Yeah, he is a lovable man. And I used to do that shit too, the fucking head thing. And yeah. I actually just posted a picture with me and Neville Staples from the specials. He came out and sang with us. And I can see on my forehead, there's a huge gash from where the microphone hit. And it's like, it's just interesting. Like when you're on stage, you do things like you and I are never going to do that. Like right now, I'm not going to grab this bottle and just start smashing my head. But like on stage, you're just, it's a whole different thing. You get this adrenaline and you just become this whole different fucking character. It's weird how that happens. But but yeah, fuck, what were we talking about?
Fever, but it's all good. yeah, another band I wanted to briefly talk about is a band I discovered on, was it Soundwave? Yeah, I think it was Soundwave in 2012, I think, which was Foxy Shazam. The frontman, Eric, is another one of my favourite frontmen of all time. Have you ever seen him doing the cigarette-eating trick that he does live? Unbelievable.
I think I saw him maybe four or five times before I signed him. And it was a really tough signing because Tom Wally didn't quite get it at first because his band, I mean, look, Eric is, I don't know who puts on a better show than Eric. I mean, it's like Jason's energy is incredible, but Eric's just such a weirdo. It's like, you can't not watch him, but he never, besides Sky, I mean, Sky, the keyboard player put on a great show, but everyone else in the band were kind of, I don't know. And Tom never quite understood why, if Eric was going to be like the new, like he always compared him to Bruce Springsteen, like Eric being this like incredible, just prolific writer, why the band wasn't as good as him. He never quite understood why he didn't have, you know, the E Street Band behind him. God, that was such an uphill battle all the time with those guys. Cause they were one of those bands that like, unlike Bert, they really didn't want my experience, which is fine. It's not like, I mean, they hired, you know, ultimately they hired me as a producer. They chose to use me as an A&R guy. And I think that self-titled album is still like one of my favorite records I've ever done. So don't get me wrong, but it's like, they made such strange choices after they left me. And I think Justin made a pretty good record from The Darkness. I mean, that record is pretty good, but the one after that is the one that got him dropped. And it's like, it was tough because I knew that Eric, if enough people could see Eric, and look, Macklemore felt the same way, put him in the video, of course. For me, he would say the story about his kid live, or he would talk about something heartfelt, and then immediately he'd switch and make a joke about it. And you're like, I never really felt like I could connect in my soul when everything was kind of funny, you know? And as great as he was eating cigarettes and crab walking across the stage and all the shit that he did, it was like, you need to feel something in your heart with the music. And that's why I think like that song, Oh Lord, really, I think it's probably their biggest song they still have to this day, was like about his kids. Like that is what connected the audience with the band. I don't know. You can't really have all of it. You can't be the craziest front man and the funniest person and the most heartfelt and write the biggest hooks. Like you've kind of got to like, what are you doing? I mean, what are you really doing? Are you a musician? Are you a comedian? Like, are you a magician? I don't know.
It's true. He did make those cigarettes disappear. That was very magic of him.
But on that train of thought as well, I mean, with all the bands you've worked with over the years, which one would you say has like surprised you the most, or you just thought had a bag of creativity that you didn't expect going into a writing session or the studio with?
God, that's a great question. And I mean, every artist that I've worked with have kind of come out, and I mean, it's like I'm working with all these bands like that you haven't heard yet, like Arrested Youth and this kid Mason, and it's like I the curse and the blessing that I have is I have a memory that works in the moment.
Okay.
Like I write in the moment, and I have a really hard time remembering. Like, I could never be in a covers band. I was thinking about this yesterday. How many people like play covers? And it's like, I can play Goldfinger songs because I guess I've played them. So many times it's ingrained in my brain, but my memory like really, really sucks when it comes to, like I said, the Police are my all-time favorite band, but I mean, I don't know, like Andy Black is like, he brings something to the table. Like, I'll come up with a melody and like an idea of a concept, and he'll switch it into this like dark gothic, like comic book version where it's like, it always shocks me, you know, of what he, how he kind of like morphs ideas into this thing that's uniquely him, you know. Bert will walk away from any song that we kind of start, and he'll turn it into this poem that didn't exist, and then he'll have like an interlude, this part of the song, this like, holy shit, that didn't even exist. And look, we'll write, like, you know, Hoppus and I'll write a melody and like a guitar and a bass part, and then all of a sudden like Travis comes in and it becomes this halftime thing where in my mind it was like this full-time punk kind of groove. Okay. or like and he'll make it a completely different song. So I guess all artists I work with at some point in the creative album making process, you know, there's a moment I'm always surprised, but I want to say Travis is probably number one, the way that he morphs things in a different direction. Like, I was just writing with Michael Clifford, and we have this kind of, it's like a Tame Impala somber idea, and Travis just came in and laid in this like Coachella Four on the Floor beat, and I'm like, holy shit, man, like it just totally changed the song. So
yeah,
that's the answer.
Awesome.
Incredible. And John, with all that as well, we've talked and kind of mentioned that we've had loads of the bands who've worked with you on in the past, but one thing they always bring up, and I know you've kind of got this like reputation for it now, but is your love of coffee. I've got to ask, how did all that start? Because it's kind of become its own meme in many ways.
I know, dude. There's a... You know, when I was kind of in between careers, and like I talked about, like thinking, am I going to have to? I mean, there's one point where I was like, I was an electrician. A friend of mine was an electrician. And I was like, we had to go to South Central LA, and we had to crawl, you know, he would make me do all the grunt work. So I was crawling underneath apartment complexes, pulling wire, getting shocked with all these dead cats. And it was like, fuck, am I going to have to go back to being a fucking whatever? Like, you know, at one point, and I was like hit by this massive depression. I was like, holy fuck, man, how am I gonna, you know, support my kids, blah blah blah. And I talked to this mentor of mine, and he said, I don't care how you feel, when you wake up in the morning, just go outside and say, I love my life, as loud as you can. And I'm like, fuck, I'm not gonna do that. That's fucking stupid. A, and B, like, it's not gonna work because I'm miserable. I'm just miserable. And then eventually, like, I got, what did my friend say? It's always darkest right before it turns pitch black, you know, I'm like, and so I went outside, and I was in my own backyard. I'm like, well, I love my life, you know? And this kid I was interviewing to intern for me showed up a half hour early. My wife let him in. So he was standing right next to me, and he's like, I love my life too, because I didn't know he was there. You know, he's had fucking no idea. And it's like these little things people have kind of guided me. And like, I guess in the big picture of coffee, like, and I say I love my life out loud, whether I'm homicidal or suicidal, I say it anyway. I try and trick myself. Like I said earlier, like the second that negativity creeps in, like I have to get moving. And coffee is just part of my thing. And look, I'm an addict by nature. I'm a workaholic. And like I said, I mean, I'm an alcoholic. I'm a fucking drug addict, all that shit. Anything that feels good, I'm going to do it until it doesn't feel good anymore. Like, I'll fucking jack off till I'm dehydrated, you know? It's like,
till it just comes out as powder.
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly. And, and so coffee, like I've got my coffee machine right here.
Nice.
I don't know if you can see it. Yeah, it's like it's built in the wall. And so I've already made I've got my double shot already kicking in my system. But I just feel like, you know, a lot of times when you're writing music, if you're in that zone where you're just, you have a guitar and I'm in front of the computer and I'm just going for an idea, I have a 10-minute rule. If it doesn't come in 10 minutes, we move on to something else. Maybe I'll move on to the bridge or to the second verse and I'll come back to it, because forcing an idea most of the time, it just feels forced. And when you listen to it, if I can make myself cry writing a song, I know the world can cry. If I can make myself laugh or feel angry or feel the passion, I know the world can feel that. But if I'm feeling like, this is fucking terrible, and I'm looking at rhyme zone and I'm like trying to find the words, it's like it never really connects with other people. And so the idea of coffee, of leaving the area, coming and making a coffee and stepping away from the song, is so important to be able to like restart the brain and then go back in, and then you've got like a different perspective. You know, and plus it's like I get up at 6 and most of the people I work with wake up at like 1 in the afternoon. And so for me, it's like, how do I compete? You know, how do I compete with these kids? And so coffee is like, I'm an addict.
Nice. I think, yeah, there's been like 90 odd episodes, and I think that's the first time that the lyricist's best friend, Rhyme Zone, has been mentioned on the podcast. Yeah, I don't think a lot of people listen to this know how many times singers have gone to Rhyme Zone just looking for words. Unbelievable.
I know.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
And just a couple of very more quick things, John, because I know you've got such a busy schedule as always. But we're dying to know, you've mentioned having bins in the studio. There's very famous story of you recording a bike sound for bits in the past and stuff like that. But what's the most weird or unique recording technique you have done in your time?
God, we have done so many weird things. I mean, I think I cut up a vibrator, like a dildo. I think I put a mic up against the dildo, recorded the vibrations and cut it up as a loop. I mean, that's probably the weirdest thing I did, but
yeah.
I mean, you know, when we were making the
yeah.
So
I'm crying. I'm sorry. Carry on.
That could be the weirdest thing I've ever fucking done. But I mean, back in making the Used first album, and I remember it's 2 in the morning, and I think we have it on videotape. And we just took all this, like plates and bowls and pan, you know, frying pans and silverware, and just, you know, had Bert on a microphone and just started throwing shit at Bert to get him to scream harder. And it was, I think it was greener with the scenery. We did that. And I think we filmed it, and it's like, yeah, we just have him screaming and just the whole band and me throwing shit at him to get him to like really get motivated. You know, and my wife was trying to sleep in the other room, and she's going, what the fuck? This guy's screaming. We had a really little house back then. And it's like, that was weird. I mean, I've recorded shit underwater. I've done, the Foxy Shazam record, we found all these different, you know, we had him stand on the cabinet in my bedroom, and I had the microphone on the bed, and I had him, you know, sing and then jump onto the bed singing, just to get like the idea of the energy of the live show. So we've done all sorts of shit. Yeah, it's funny. Like nowadays, like artists don't have the, I was working with this new artist that's got a huge song on Spotify. It went viral through TikTok and through Fortnite video. And it's like, we were talking about like, what are your goals? He's like, I want a number one record, because then my manager promised he's going to skydive with me. And I'm like, in my mind, my goals were always to have people sing back the lyrics that I've written. That was always the goal, the live show. And obviously to get girls, you know, I met my wife, you know, because we toured. So it's like, you know, A, get girls, B, have them sing along back to you. And this kid has never played a live show, and he just doesn't have a desire to perform. Like that's just, and a lot of kids, that's not what they want to do anymore. It's just really different than it used to be. And that's okay. It's like, I'm not saying one way's right or wrong. I'm just saying for me, my goal is to still, how can I imagine playing the Reading Festival and everyone just jumping? Like what can I do to make that happen? You know?
Nice. Nice. And finally, what else can we expect from the John Feldmann camp coming up? You're working on so many records, got your own podcast, more new Goldfinger, but anything else we can expect?
I've written this musical called Castle Hill that I just finished the trailer on it. So it's like we've got like this movie trailer that we're going to start pitching to production companies and to movie studios. So that's like, I've always had a dream. You know, my father only let us listen to musicals when I was a kid, which is definitely why I became an alcoholic for sure. So I think that in the end, part of that history of listening to The Music Man and Sound of Music and all that stuff is like, it's ingrained in me. And so I've got this kind of punk rock musical idea that's really what I want to focus on the next couple of years.
Nice.
Amazing. Well, nice. looking forward to hearing more information about that when it's out. But, yeah, this has been such a wonderful chat. Thank you so much, John, for taking time out. I think those people are really going to enjoy some of these mad stories.
I know I have. So thank you very much. Yeah, thank you so, so much.
All right, later, guys.
You're listening to Sabin Podcast! Yes!
Quality.
Awesome.
Absolutely fantastic. What a fantastic chat. Thank you again to John Feldmann. Thank you very much to his assistant, who you had to deal with prior to this.
He was a lovely person. I don't know what tone you were giving towards him there. Lovely. I had a great chat.
This is how we get in trouble. This is how we never get guests again. There was no tone.
No, I know. I'm only messing, but his assistant was lovely. I had a brilliant conversation with him. He had a new puppy as well, so we were talking about that for a bit and helped us set all this up. So thank you again. This chat with John was amazing. It's such a musical mind. Literally, when you just think of all those bands he's able to work with and the impact he's had on so many people without maybe a lot of them even knowing, is just incredible. So yes, thank you again to John. As I said earlier, Goldfinger now have a brand new single out called Wallflower, and as you heard in that conversation, a new album is all ready to go with this Super Saiyan lineup that more details will come very, very soon. So make sure you keep up to date with everything with that on John Feldmann's website and Goldfinger's social media pages. But quick question, Sean. I should have asked him this, but ever since, I'm gutted I didn't. How the hell do you record stuff underwater? Because when he said that, I was blown away. That just doesn't make sense.
No, I got no idea. I remember I saw a video of him recording Bert from the Used for the first record, and I was blown away because they were doing it in like an underpass, right? Over a road. And he had like his laptop with him and an SM7, which is the long black mic you see a lot of singers using. Just out and about. And that was the first time I'd ever seen anything like that. Or even thought, I was like, oh, that's mad. You can just go out and record. And so some of his recording techniques are absolutely bonkers. So yeah, thanks to John for all the Goldfinger. Open Your Eyes is one of my favourite songs. Thank you very much to John for producing the bands that literally created the scene that I was lucky enough to be part of and kind of still am part of. So all round, we're not worthy. Me and you are Wayne and Garth, which is now, I've just realised, our Halloween costume idea. We've just missed that though, because bloody Corona. But again, thank you very much to John. I thanked him too much.
Yes. But no, when you just think, like, he discovered the Used, and then that impact from that moment is just phenomenal. But if you're a first-time listener to Sapling Podcast and you're thinking, oh, these guys get some pretty nice conversations out of their guests, I'd like to hear a bit more. Well, funny enough, Bert from The Used is a previous guest at Sapling Podcast. And as you probably heard us mention quite a few times, we've had a whole host of the bands he's worked with recently. So go and check out all our previous episodes, share it with your friends, click subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts, and just put it in your Instagram stories to get the word out. It's a great first celebration to end the double digit era of the podcast.
Wow.
Episode 100 is next week, and that is too many digits for my head to even think about that. We've got
three?
That. Yeah.
Three digits.
Because we've gotten that far. We've gotten to the point where we're
ages,
now three digits.
But for ages, the first number's going to be one. So it's not that. You've just got to remember two other numbers then, haven't you?
Yeah. But it's a big landmark, Sean, and we should celebrate that because we've
also
got...
John Feldman gets a mention in episode 100 as well.
Oh,
I believe.
Don't say anything.
And 101, I think.
Possibly, yeah. So
unbelievable, but yeah, yes. What an episode! I've enjoyed it very much. But also, this episode would not be available if it wasn't for some of the beautiful people who are part of our Patreon community.
That is correct.
So if you've enjoyed any of these 99 episodes, or technically 100, because you did a bonus one as well, please, if you can, you don't have to, obviously, please think about going to patreon.com/sapnin and supporting your homies, us. So patreon.com/sapnin. We appreciate all of the people involved so far, and anyone who has been involved who's no longer involved, we also appreciate you.
Literally, even the littlest of tears goes a long, long way and helps us with so much things. And we love every single person in that group. But just to say as well, it's probably the best time for you to join, because we're going to be putting up a load of extra material on our Patreon page. And we're even doing a virtual meetup to celebrate our 100th episode the day after it is, and having a massive kind of party for the whole day online. So if you need some new friends, your old ones are just boring as fuck, why
some
not
losers.
Go to patreon.com/sapnin, join the group, have some more laughs with us, and meet your new best friends. The 99% of them, I didn't even mean that, but that fitted in.
Get on with it.
Super tidy.
Yes they are. And we love them all very, very much.
So go and give us a follow at Sapnin Pod on Twitter and Instagram as well. Sean, how would you spell that?
@SAPPENIMPOD.
Give us a follow, send us some messages, like all our stuff. But before we go any further, we need to say the biggest shout out to everyone involved in our Patreon. If you head to the description of this episode, we thank so many incredible names, but we need to give a mahoosive, gigantic, special shout out to the elite members of our Patreon community. They've probably changed their names to some funny stuff to wind Sean up, and you're about to hear all of that happen now.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thank you very much to Kylie Wheeler, Mayumi Liuaway, Mitch Perry, Samantha Spray. Sarah's written something in Korean, I think that is. I don't know what it is. I can't even begin to pronounce it. Thank you very much to Emma Barber, Janelle, I don't know what you're talking about, Kasten, Amadina Bano, Kelly Young, Dilly, Everything is Completely Normal, Grimwood, Nathan Croshaw, Paul probably crying about While She Sleeps by the time this comes out to Hirschfield. Oh, I wonder what's happening. Oh, anyway. Thank you very much to Drew, Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman, Styles, Liam Connolly, Kelly Ewan, Michael Engler, Ohio is for Emo Chester, Tom Owen, Amy Campion, Johnny Phillips, Kate Gentleman Preferred Ginger's Patak, Scott Jones, Simon Amos, Jodie Shannon, Ollie Nothing to See Her, Amesbury, Kate Stevenson, Samuel Griffiths, Jenny Sexy Boy Munster, Dana Lasnova, Lucy Deeds, Martina McManus, Emily Senegals, Kevin Clark, Erin Auer, John and Emma, Becky Andy, Kelly Move Along Now, Mallory, Louis Cook, Nuala Clark, Jason Nothing's Happening Here, Heredia, Mike Cunningham, Marcy Jacobson. Thank you very much to Craig Harris, Sandra Kuwacek, James McNaught, Livy Cropper, Charles, Kelly Emma Cannon, Tallulah Grant, Tony Michael, Sharif Awadali, Stuart McNaught, Jenny Robinson, and Lydia Henderson. Thank you very much, you beautiful bastards.
Yes, you are the sugar in our tea. We can't go out a day without you. I don't know. But I have an announcement to make sure. I have a special announcement to
make. I'm glad you give up on that. I don't know. Yeah. Go on, Paul. Get our special announcement. Go
right,
on,
well, basically, as regular listeners will know, you do these names at the end of every episode.
Yeah.
But if we go back to episode 50 with Thrice, you made me do it because, you know, 5-0. So I guess it's only fair for 100 next
right
week.
Then. So everybody listening to this, shut up you. It's Sean's, shut up you. It's Sean's time to talk. Everybody listening to this, join the Patreon, right? And just change your name to the most difficult thing you think Morgan can say. Please. Because I have had fucking 98 of these bastard things to say. And some of them have been tongue twisters. Some of them are even in foreign languages. I need revenge. Let's bring Morgan down. Come back with loads of tongue twisters and R's and S's and SH's. Come on, let's get him to look like a fool, please.
All I ask is do not get me cancelled, because that would not be nice. But you could either be very, very nice and just say congratulations for reaching 100 episodes, Morgan, you're our favourite, you know, just the nice things, or you can run wild with it.
Lies.
Yeah.
Lies, like.
Yeah, they could lie. They could lie to make me feel better. I wouldn't mind that. Yeah. But if you want to run away with it.
Okay, it's telling him he's handsome.
Oh, wow. Meow.
Anyway, are we.
Is there anything else, Sean?
Patreon.com/Sapnin. Thank you very much. At Sapnin Pod on Twitter and Instagram. Morgan wants to say something. I can see him pointing.
Any news of Raiders? Your band, Raiders Band UK, if anyone has not listened
yet. We've got a song called I Still Function out. Check it out. We've got a song called Destructobot and a song called Wasted Away out. Check them out, please. Share them if you like them.
They're massive in Russia.
We're doing well in Russia, apparently, which is very, very strange and worrying. So, Vladimir, if you're listening to this, you're a good guy. You seem all right. I don't know what everybody else is on about. Anyway, gotta go. Sapnin! I wish I knew some Russian now.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast with Sean Smith and Morgan Richards. Thank you very much for downloading this podcast or streaming it, or I don't know what else you do with podcasts. Thank you very much.